Cindy, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the teleconference. I'm Cindy Horn, the Director of Life Planning for Lambda Legal, and I'd like to welcome all of you to our teleconference on the topic of the IRS's new rules regarding income splitting of community property income for registered domestic partners in Washington, California, and Nevada, and for married same-sex couples in California. We've seen a tremendous interest in these calls, and we're very glad to have such a distinguished panel of experts joining us again tonight to explain the new rules. Some of you may have attended this workshop last year, and if so, we're happy to have you join us again this year. We are grateful for the support of the Anita May Rosenstein Foundation, which has generously underwritten portions of our Protect Yourself series. The Anita May Rosenstein Foundation has been a longtime advocate helping to ensure LGBT people have the knowledge and resources needed to access the rights and opportunities we are entitled to. Our speakers tonight are Peter Wren, Deb Kenny, and Karen Sodgill. Peter Wren is a staff attorney in Lambda Legal's Western Regional Office in Los Angeles. He has been the point person for Lambda Legal's legal team on the income splitting issue. Together with the law firm of Arell and Manella, and with the help from attorney Wendy Hartman, as well as our former National Marriage Project Director Jenny Pizer, Peter developed the FAQ of this topic that is available on our website, which I encourage all of you to download. If you have any questions that either aren't answered or you would like follow-up questions, please go to our frequently asked questions on the Lambda Legal website. Deb Kenny lives and works in the San Francisco Bay Area and is the principal of DLK Law Group PC, a law firm providing comprehensive and competent estate planning, trust administration, and probate issues. Deb serves on the board of directors and is co-chair of the Planned Giving Committee of the Horizons Foundation and a vice president of the Board of Equality California. Karen Sodgill also lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and is the founder and president of KKS Tax Associates, Incorporated. She is an enrolled agent and a certified employee benefits specialist. She has been a frequent speaker on taxation issues, serves on the Franchise Tax Board Focus Group on Registered Domestic Partnership Taxation, and has conducted training for the California CPA Education Foundation. Thanks to each of you for joining us tonight. Our speakers have generously agreed to stay on the call for a little bit more than an hour if needed so that we can cover a number of all the information that you need, and we hope you're able to stay with us if your time permits. And I will give you some instructions in case you have a specific question that's not interested tonight. The speakers are going to try to answer very generalized questions, and will not necessarily be able to answer all of your questions that are very specific to your own particular needs. So my first question is for Peter. Peter, can you give us an overview of what we're going to hear tonight and what it means for the community?
Sure. Tonight we're addressing the IRS rules regarding income splitting that registered domestic partners in California, Washington, and Nevada, as well as married same-sex couples in California, have to follow. And our goal is really just to give everyone an overview of the rules and explain the basics so that you're either empowered to do your own taxes if you feel comfortable, or to know from the general guidelines we're providing that given your situation, you really might be better off working with a professional this year. The changes that we're talking about actually occurred in May of 2010, and it was really the culmination of a lot of advocacy done by folks in the LGBT and tax community, including Karen and Deb and others. And we really view the development as a good thing because in the past, even though states were treating same-sex couples more fairly, the federal government was essentially disregarding those changes. And the IRS development doesn't fix everything, but it's certainly a step in the right direction towards more equal treatment. And also, as a practical matter, many same-sex couples are likely to save money as a result of the new IRS position. All that said, we know that this can be a confusing time, especially when the kinks are still being worked out in the system, and so our goal is to give you the information that you need so you can figure out what plan makes the most sense for your individual situation. The one thing I do want to mention at the outset is that what you hear tonight does not constitute legal or tax advice. If you have questions specific to your situation, we strongly encourage you to talk with your tax professional or attorney. And I'm about to give you a website and a phone number, so if you don't have a pen ready, you might want to grab one. But if you don't have a tax professional or an attorney currently and you would like one, you can contact our help desk at lambdalegal.org/helpdesk, or you can call us at 213-382-7600, and we can give you information for an expert that's local to you. Again, that phone number is 213-382-7600.
Peter, does this mean that the federal government is now recognizing marriages and registered domestic partnerships of same-sex couples?
So for better or worse, not exactly. The federal government has essentially set up a scheme in which it assesses tax based on what the state says that you own. So for example, if state law said roommates also have community property rights, the federal government should respect those rights too, but it isn't recognizing the relationship between roommates in so much as a byproduct of their relationship. And the same is true with respect to same-sex relationships. And I should note that the IRS rules that we're talking about today also apply to different sex domestic partners. So it really isn't about the government recognizing their relationships. Now, that said, the amount of taxes that same-sex couples pay as a result of the IRS rule in position looks a lot more like the amount that different sex couples pay on the taxes. So the effect of it is certainly to make things more equal, even if the federal government isn't technically recognizing same-sex relationships.
Is this in conflict with the Defense of Marriage Act?
No, and the reason is because, so just to back up a little bit, the IRS ruling that we're talking about also applies to same-sex spouses in California, just like it does to registered domestic partners in California, Nevada, and Washington. But again, because the government isn't technically recognizing the relationship, but just the property ownership interests that flow from it, it isn't actually recognizing same-sex couples' marriages. And so it doesn't present a conflict with the Defense of Marriage Act.
And, you know, if we could just add, this is Deb speaking. Good evening, everyone. We also believe that in New Mexico, married couples should also be following the same procedural guidelines. The Attorney General issued an opinion letter there saying that there was nothing barring the courts from recognizing same-sex marriages. And it is one of the community property states. There's only 9 community property states. So it is, yet again, one more community property state with some sort of relationship recognition, not equal to the other 3 states that we're talking about tonight. But it would seem that they could have a good legal basis to do that.
Thank you. Karen, can you address quickly for anyone on the call who dealt with this issue or attended one of our seminars last tax season, has anything important changed from last year to this year?
Yeah, there have been some new developments, although they have not been dramatic changes for the most part. But we do hope to cover a little bit in this call some about the experience that people had in filing these tax returns last year. So we'll talk about any issues they had getting them processed with the IRS and e-filing issues. As Deb mentioned already, it was in January of last year, 2011, that the New Mexico Attorney General came out with the opinion that New Mexico would recognize same-sex marriages performed elsewhere. So we're incorporating sort of that new this year into the fold. Then the IRS updated their Internal Revenue Manual, which is the manual that goes to IRS employees, and they added specific language for how those employees should be handling registered domestic partner and community property splitting returns. And that was in October of 2011. Also in October of 2011, the National Taxpayer Advocate Service revised their case acceptance criteria. This is an organization that taxpayers normally can go to get help if they have trouble processing, getting their returns processed by the IRS. And apparently so many of us went to them for help that they revised their criteria so that they would no longer help us unless we could prove that there was financial hardship in our case. And so we have some suggestions on sort of how to get around that for you. And then the last thing that is that on November 16th of 2011, the IRS actually issues questions and answers for registered domestic partners and same-sex spouses in California, and they posted those to their website, and we'll talk a little bit about what those questions and answers say and where we still disagree with the IRS in a few cases on those questions and answers. And then the last thing that's sort of not particularly new, but we didn't cover very much last year, and we hope to be able to cover a little bit more this year, is whether people should consider filing a protective claim as a married filing joint filing status in the event that DOMA is determined to be unconstitutional, because there's been a number of court activity during the last year or 2 years. And so we'll talk a little bit about protective claims tonight as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Karen, how are 2010 and 2011 income tax filings different for registered domestic partners in these states compared to the past?
Well, basically in the past, before we had this CCA ruling that said we're going to recognize your community property, in the past, even if you were a registered domestic partner or a same-sex spouse and you had community property, the IRS said, we don't care, we want you to just ignore it when you get to the federal tax side of things. So, for example, if I had a W-2 job, I would put my W-2 on my own tax return. It was no different than any other person. But what has happened with the CCA is the IRS realized that, well, the state of California, Nevada, Washington, now New Mexico, is recognizing that we really have community property. And when that's the case, as soon as you entered into your formalized status, relationship status, you started working for your community. You were no longer working just for yourself. And so everything that you earn from your personal efforts, whether as a W-2 employee or as a self-employed person, you are earning for your community. And each of the two partners own that 50-50 automatically by operation of law. And so what this CCA did was it said there has always been a longstanding principle that the state has the right to determine who owns the income, and the IRS simply taxes it. So now they said, we're going to recognize that your state says you own 50% of your W-2. You don't own 100% of it. Therefore, when you file your federal tax return as a single taxpayer, you only put half of your W-2 income on there. And your spouse or your partner will put the other half on their return because they own that income. And likewise, their income as well, that's community. Now, if either of you have what's called separate property, and we're going to detail what these terms mean later, you would put all of your separate property and your separate property income on your tax return because you're the 100% owner of that portion. So basically, what you put on your tax return is what you own. You know, and if you just give an example of some, if you have somebody who has like $100,000 W-2, just to make it really clear, if that's all we had, if I made $100,000 and my spouse stayed home and she took care of the kids, before I would have put $100,000 on my tax return. Now I put $50,000 on my tax return. My spouse puts $50,000 on her tax return, and we'll go through exactly the mechanics of how you would have that appear on the tax returns. But essentially, you're each going to be taxed on the $50,000.
And now that's mandatory since 2010, is that correct?
That's correct. It's mandatory for 2010 forward.
Okay. Peter, just to clarify, same-sex couples are not now considered married filing jointly for federal tax purposes. Is that correct?
That's correct. That certainly continues to be the position of the IRS based on DOMA. So in other words, because of DOMA, you can't use the filing status of either married filing jointly or married filing separately on your federal tax returns. Instead, you must continue to file as single or, where applicable, as head of household. Now, that said, there are certainly married same-sex couples out there who nevertheless do choose to file their federal tax returns as married. And some have taken that position because of a growing number of courts which have held that DOMA is unconstitutional, as Deb and Karen mentioned, and that accordingly they take the position that there's a basis for filing their federal tax returns as married. We can't tell you what to do on that front. It's really a very personal choice. But certainly, if you do choose to file your federal tax returns as married, you should be prepared at least for a potential fight with the IRS. Now, that's not to say that you have to check married and that's the end of it. We understand that obviously if you are married, you know, it causes some injury to you to have to check that you're single when it's not really true. And so one thing that we have suggested and some people have done is to essentially include an attachment with your federal tax return that says you're filing as single because of DOMA, but that you nevertheless are married. And there's a sample tear-out sheet in one of our publications that has this type of form that you can attach. It's in our Take the Power Toolkit, which you can find on the Land Legal website just by typing in Take the Power Toolkit in the search area. And towards the end of it, there's a tear-out form which you can attach with your tax return that spells out that disclaimer.
Okay, thank you. But for state tax purposes, would these people file married if they're married?
So for state tax purposes, that would only apply, assuming that we're only talking about the three states of California, Nevada, and Washington, that would only apply in California because California is the only state with income tax. And when you're filing your state income tax returns in California and you're either married or a registered domestic partner, then you need to choose the filing status that corresponds to that. In other words, you should not be using the single filing status. And if you're in New Mexico, as Deb mentioned, you know, there's a basis also for saying that income splitting should apply for people who are married in that state, who got married out of state, of course. And also, it's not yet clear whether or not you'll be able to file your state tax returns as married or single.
Karen, can you explain what it means and what the value of filing a protective claim until this issue is finally resolved?
Yeah, the protective claim is basically keeps open your statute, essentially. So when you file a tax return, it is open for federal purposes, it's open for 3 years after the date that you filed a return. So if it's for 2008, for example, you filed your return in 2009, say you filed by April 15th of 2009, your tax return is open for 3 years from that date. So it's open until April the 15th of 2012. If you discover an error on your tax return, you can go back and amend it during that time period. If the IRS wants to audit your tax return, they can audit it during that time period. After that, the statute of limitations closes. That's the legal term. Since DOMA may, in fact, be determined to be unconstitutional, and if it's determined unconstitutional by a court, then it never was constitutional, and presumably in 2008, if you were married on the last day of the year in 2008, you would have been able to file a married filing joint or a married filing separate federal income tax return. In order to preserve your rights, say DOMA is not declared unconstitutional another 2 or 3 years from now, that your 2008 tax return would be closed and you couldn't go back and amend it. But if you file what's called a protective claim now, then you just say, this is a tax situation that's evolving, and if it, in fact, it evolves in such a way that it would benefit me to file an amended return, I want to keep that option open. And that's filing the protective claim. So you have to file that protective claim by April 15, 2012 for your 2008 returns, or if you extended by the date you actually filed your return, say June 15th or August the 12th, you need to file your protective claim, and that will keep the year open. And even if it takes 10 years, God forbid, for DOMA to go down, you would have 10 years that you could go back and then refile your return as married filing joint. So for those couples who would save substantial tax, and this is certainly not all of us, but there may be 20 or 30% of the couples out there who, in fact, would save substantial tax filing married filing jointly, for example. It could be $10,000 a year that you could get for those years. And as long as you file your protective claim now, you're going to reserve your right to go back and get that $10,000 back from the IRS when DOMA goes down.
All right. This question is for either Deb or Karen. Moving back to the community property issue, can you explain to us generally what constitutes community property as opposed to separate property for those people who don't understand what we're talking about exactly?
Sure. So when one either registers or gets married and lives in a community property state, as of the date that you become a legally related couple, and if you don't have a prenup, or we call them a pre-dup, if it's a pre-domestic partnership registration agreement, you start acquiring community property as of that date. So community property, it originally was intended to note that both people in a couple had equal contribution to the success of that relationship. And it didn't matter if one made more and one made less. They both own the community property. So it's basically earned income, and then the assets and investments that are acquired with that earned income as of the date of your relationship. So you have to
be... the formal relationship.
Pardon me?
Of the formal relationship, the marriage or the registration of the domestic partnership.
That's exactly right. So everything that you had before was separate property, and gifts and inheritances received whenever are separate property, but the earnings and the assets acquired after the date of your formal relationship, your legal recognition, are your community property assets, and your earned income is your community property income as well.
Can partners some way elect not to enter into a community property situation?
Absolutely. I mean, they can have a prenup or a pre-dup, and they can agree that only a portion of their income is going to become community property. They can agree that none of it is going to become community property. In California, in order to do an agreement like that, each party should be represented by counsel, because one party is gaining something, typically the higher earner, and one party is giving up something. So for an agreement like that to be enforceable later in court, the courts would like to know that the people who were affected by that agreement actually fully understood what the ramifications of such an agreement were.
All right, but absent that agreement, once the relationship is formalized in a community property state, those assets that are accumulated after that, under the circumstances that you have described, will accumulate as community property.
Right, and I bet a lot of people are on the phone thinking, oh, this already sounds difficult. Let's just say we didn't have community property last year. And it is our belief that you cannot come up with an agreement now that is in effect retroactively to determine what is community property income. If you want to get out of the community property schematic, you can do it on a go-forward basis. But if you want to change your assets that you have already, whether it be from community property to separate property, that would be with a transmutation agreement. But it's still not going to affect the income that you earned last year for your income tax purposes.
All right, thanks. Deb, at what times in their lives do couples need to be concerned about whether a particular asset is considered community rather than separate property?
Well, as I like to tell my clients, the only time they ever care about this is a divorce and death, and now for income taxes. But historically, you know, people didn't pay a lot of attention to what was community property and separate property. And in the heterosexual model, people didn't pay attention until after the second or third divorce. You get married early in life, you don't have anything, you start earning it together, you're trying to figure out what the rules of the road are, and it only really comes up later on. And as I said, usually in divorce or death. And you have to realize that most heterosexual couples that have been married don't really go down to this kind of an analysis for income tax, because they put everything typically on a married filing joint form, and they don't have to determine what is their community property and their separate property for just income tax filing. So this has become an additional burden or a complexity of being a same-sex couple, because we're getting the recognition that we're acquiring community property and have these community property rights, and having to sort through what is community property and separate property. And, you know, I have a lot of clients that have been together 20 years or 30 years and maybe married, you know, 3 or 4. They might have been married earlier. They might have been registered for 11. And we've had to go back and sort through to really figure out what is their separate property, because the income generated off their separate property investments will be on, listed as their separate property income, as Karen explained. And the rest of their earned income and their community property investments, and that income will be their community property income and needs to be split. So there definitely is an awareness that we have again just to comply with these rules. You know, the other thing that I might add is that a lot of people will look at me and say, all of my income is community property. We've been together for 20 years. We've only been registered for one, but it's all of our assets are community property. And rarely is that a true statement. And again, it's, you know, how we have lived our lives and put them together is a little bit different. And again, it's kind of the round peg in the square hole. So we have to go back and really understand what is community property, what's community property income.
Go ahead.
Can I add one more thing? You don't want to just make broad statements about what's community property or what's separate property for your income tax purposes. You can find ways to do your income taxes without changing all of your property rights, et cetera.
And so the community property and separate property are really legal terms. So people that have been together for 30 years may consider that the things they own together because they've been together for 30 years. But from a legal standpoint, we can't say that the property they have is community property or separate property. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Deb, can you discuss any gift tax implications that may arise from community property designations?
Well, yeah, and that just kind of leads more into what I was just saying, is that I have people look at me and they say, well, it's a joint account, it must be community property. And I say, well, where did the money in the account come from? Well, it came from my partner's bonus last year before we were married. Well, just because it's a joint account doesn't make it community property. It's really the source of the income and the source of the assets. So if we want to make things community property, and actually this year we have, and last year we've had new opportunities to look at that again, we can do that. If I have, you know, $250,000 investment account that's technically mine, but I want it to be my partner's equally, knowing darn well that if she runs off with the pool girl, she gets to take half of it with her. I can do a transmutation agreement, and I can file a gift tax return, and I can say it is now equally ours. You know, right now you can give $5 million away during your lifetime gift tax free. So that means you're not paying a gift tax at this point, but it goes against what you can leave at death. Having said that, we are using that extra large gift tax exemption this year to equalize some estates or to transfer some properties or to make community property when there's a lot of sense to do it. Rarely do I think filing income taxes is that enough good reason to actually go ahead and transmute property. But there are a lot of other reasons that might be legitimate reasons that reflect a relationship or reflect the assets, or sometimes they never put their partner on title, but they've contributed half. You know, so there are a number of underlying reasons to look at gifting during this particular period. That $5 million gift tax exemption most likely will go away at the end of 2012. Congress is going to have to act, and so we don't know that we'll get any advance notice before December 31, 2012.
Karen, can you explain what community income is and how it differs from community property?
Well, the income is the current income that you're bringing in. So income, as we talked about, income from wages, income from any personal activity while you're in partnership or marriage is community income. So that's your wages, that's your W-2 income, that's your self-employment income. If I take $5,000 out of my W-2 income and I go and buy a certificate of deposit, and that certificate of deposit, I guess, earns, you know, what, $3 if it's today's interest rates, doesn't earn a lot of money, but whatever it earns, it's community property income. And that gets split with my partner and my spouse because that's equally owned. Also, and then as Deb said, you know, we can make something community property and that can generate income. So if she gives me half of her brokerage account that she just talked about, and then whatever that brokerage account earns, the interest income, the dividend income on that, the capital gains income if we sell stocks in that brokerage account, that would be community income and that would be split on our tax returns.
Okay. And so just so that people are clear about things, could you explain then what is separate property and separate property income?
Yeah, so separate property and separate property income. Separate property is what I had before we got married. The day we got married or the day we registered, I go and I do a snapshot of my bank account, my real estate that I own. That's all my separate property, and it stays my separate property unless I transmute it and do the gift tax return and the whole bit. Otherwise, it's my separate property. When that separate property, say I had a separate brokerage account, when that brokerage account earns income, that's my separate income. It doesn't become community property income. And now that particular rule, I'm saying that, but that's the California rule. And this varies state by state. Right now we're dealing with California, Nevada, Washington, New Mexico. All of those states follow that rule that I just said, which means income that's earned on separate property stays separate property. If we ever get relationship recognition in Texas, they have their own community property rule, and they say income on separate property is community while you're in community. So you have to look to your state specifically on whether the income on your separate property stays separate. But in our cases right now, it is separate.
And, you know, just to follow up on that point, if Karen and I had each contributed $125,000 to that brokerage account prior to the date of our relationship, we don't necessarily have community property just because we own it equally. We have jointly held separate property. And so that's kind of a confusing concept as well.
So we can own it 50-50.
But that doesn't make it community property. Community property has a different tax treatment at death. And it's interesting. You get a double step up in basis, so that's when it's particularly important. And what I mean is, like, if mom and dad buy a house for $100,000, and now it's worth $1 million, their basis is $100,000, and if dad dies and it's community property, both halves get stepped up to date of death value if either one of them passes. So the new basis is then $1 million. If mom needs to sell the house, her new basis is $1 million, she sells it for just about that, there's no gain, no tax. If Karen and I buy a house together and we were married, is Chris on this call?
I don't think my wife is on this call, are you, Chris?
But if we buy a house and I pass away, my house gets stepped up to $500,000 and Karen's basis stays at 50. So there would be a $450,000 gain if Karen went to sell the house. Community property gets a double step up in basis. Now, we get that as same-sex legally related couples at the state level. We have not yet achieved that at the federal level. That's something that we're actually working on and trying to figure out how to get there, but there's a lot of the use of the word spouse in the code, so it might be a high hurdle.
Okay, if I could back up just a minute, because we have a question from the audience that reverts back to the question about the protective claim, and so that I don't forget this question. The caller wants to know who would file a protective claim for 2008, registered domestic partners or just California same-sex married couples?
Well, for sure, same-sex married couples can. Absolutely, without a question, they can file. I think it's possible. It's just unknown whether or not registered domestic partners will be considered as spouses. But if I would do it, personally, I would do it if I were a California registered domestic partner and not married in 2008. Because if, in fact, it's determined by courts that that is equivalent to marriage and spouse, and we don't know yet whether that will be the case, but that would be the only way that you would have any possibility of getting the money for the married filing joint return. We do have one indication from the IRS, and it's not citable in a court of law. It's just a letter from the chief counsel's office of the IRS to, in this case, it went to an H&R Block office in Illinois. And as you recall, Illinois just got civil unions for 2011. And this particular letter was for a heterosexual couple that was civil unioned in Illinois. And the IRS's interpretation is that that couple should be treated the same as a heterosexual married spouse for federal income tax purposes. So if we follow that logic, then I think that they very likely would follow that registered domestic partners also would be treated the same as spouses. So I would do it for both.
Because really all you're doing is preserving a potential right that you might have.
Exactly. You are not really putting yourself out there at all. You are just preserving a potential right.
Okay. This is a follow-up question to the gift tax issue. If, for example, one partner has non-retirement investment accounts that have grown considerably since they became registered domestic partners, does the allocation of the income from these assets constitute a gift of the underlying investment account that would be subject to gift tax, or is it that part of what the IRS has determined not subject to a gift tax?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question, because first we'd have to do the analysis of whether the investment account is separate property to start with or whether it was community property. But using the income off an investment account would not necessarily constitute a gift of the corpus. Now, there might be an argument that if it was a separate property account that was generating income, and I took that separate property income and I used it for the benefit of my spouse, there is potentially a very technical legal argument that I am making a gift of that money. We don't believe that that's a reasonable position for the IRS to take, nor have we seen them assert that at all. Once you are married or in a registered domestic partner, you have a duty to support your spouse. And if you need to take your separate property income to pay your bills and to pay the bills of your spouse, we feel like that is not necessarily a gift. There could
okay.
be circumstances, though, where if it was large enough, that it would be a gift. If it was really in excess of all of the monies that you spent all year and you were transferring it into their name instead of spending it, and, you know, there may be times where that should be looked at with a different optic.
All right. Thanks. Deb, how can domestic partnership agreements impact community property or community income designations?
That's actually really interesting. We've gone back and had to look at a bunch of property agreements that were entered into, especially back in 2004, 2005. In California, we had an 18-month notice that we were going to have our domestic partnerships were going to get teeth. So anybody who had registered just because they were down at the Gay Day Parade or whatever, and, you know, all they got was hospital visitation rights, got notices from the state saying, uh-oh, guess what, it's real now, and if you want to get out of it, send us a letter, but if you stay in it, you're going to get all the rights and responsibilities that opposite gender married persons have under state law in California. So at that point, we really had no idea what was going to happen to income, and we didn't know if there could be double taxation, and there were a lot of boogeymen in the closet. So a number of people with, I think, some of the best guidance that was available at the time, ran out and did these massive prenups saying that my income's mine and your income's yours, when in fact that was not how they were living. It was just the legal advice they were getting. And it wasn't even how they intended to live. They were sharing all their assets. They were buying property together, things like that. And so now we go back wanting to make the income, community property income, for instance, because if we average the income, we're in a lower tax bracket. And we've always lived as though it's both of ours. And these old prenups say differently. And so we're having to go back and see if they're still appropriate. And you know, what is the intention of the couple? We have so many couples that have so many different interpretations of how they want to put their lives together. And many of us are older when we get into relationships. And so we may want to keep some of our income separately, or we may want to have completely separate income for other reasons as well. So I think that we have to look at these agreements. And we have to look at them in light of both dissolution, potential dissolution down the road, and income taxes at the same time. And, you know, like I like to say, no straight person asks their accountant if they should get married. And we're getting a lot of questions, should we register, should we get married? And I don't think income taxes is the reason to make such a monumental decision. You know, we don't want the tail to wag the dog.
Okay, so it's something that that people should consider. They need to know what the law is, but that's not a reason to make to decide how you're going to define your relationship.
Right, and if they have old agreements, they should go back and look at them.
Okay, how complicated is it for a couple? Is all of this? Do couples need to hire a forensic accountant?
You know, some have had to. Just the example I gave earlier, when you're together 30 years and you've been domestically partnered for 11 and you've been mixing assets and throwing things together, it gets tricky. And, you know, in order to make a good faith estimate of what your separate property and community property is, you actually have to sit down and run some numbers. Some people, if they're getting married or registered now or if they've recently got it, you know, as Karen said, set up new bank accounts. So all of your old accounts, the 1099s and everything that come off of that, easy. You hand that pile to the accountant and you say, that's my separate property income. You have your new accounts. You say, that's our community property income. And you're done. You can go skiing for the weekend. Our other clients are having to give up their weekends and go back to their bank records.
Well, it's really important if you do have a complicated situation and you have to go back and figure it out. What's really important is you need to have a reasonable basis for what determination you come to. You can't, as Deb said, just say, well, you know, we just consider it all community, so it is all community. It has to actually have a basis in fact, what money went into that account, what money is still into that account. You have to document how you came to that determination. I've had clients who've looked at their Social Security earnings records for all those years because they said, you know, we contributed pretty much equally to everything based on what our income was, proportional to each other. And that's how they've determined what percentages of those accounts are community and what are separate. You absolutely have to be in agreement between the two of you. Because as I've told them time and again and all of my clients, every client comes into my office and every couple sits there and they told me, number one, we are not going to break up. And number two, if we did, it would be amicable. And the appointment right after that couple is the couple that is breaking up right now. And the arrows are going across the room while I'm sitting there trying to figure out with them what's community property and what's separate property. So the time to do it is when you're still in love with that person, come to clear agreement. Have it based on fact, write it down, what your methodology is and what you've agreed to, and be sure it's defensible. Defensible to each other, defensible if you do end up in a court of law and dissolution, defensible to the IRS if you happen to get audited and you have to defend how you came to that determination. I mean, the true rule is you look at every single deposit that went into the account, you look at every single withdrawal that went out of the account, and then you even have to look at what you used that withdrawal for. Did you use it to pay the mortgage? Did you use it for living expenses? Did you use it for vacation? And basically none of us, very few of us, can actually do that. But we can come up with something that's reasonable and that's defensible and that we can agree to.
Okay, good advice. Who would you say really needs to hire a professional tax preparer, and how do they go about choosing that wisely?
That's a really good question. I think the general answer would be, well, first of all, we have a little bit of an issue that with the way that the guidelines are written now, there's not enough clarity, and some of the guidelines are incorrect. And so our usual fallbacks to TurboTax and such, they're not putting forth software that we can use. Also, the professionals don't really have usable software, so most tax returns are being done by hand. The first thing that is a big red flag when clients come in is if they're self-employed, we have to really look to see how they were handling that. And I actually, when I talk to accountants, the first thing I say to them is how are they handling self-employment reporting on the tax returns? Because if they are following the guidelines as stated right now, the client is in a worse-off position. And it's something that I don't think the IRS intended to do, but they haven't figured out how to make it better yet. We're working with the IRS. Karen and I have been working directly with the IRS and our local electeds and our U.S. senators and everybody else to see if we can't get this resolved, because the outcome is ridiculous. So the accountants that you're going to want to work with are people that are not working in silos, but know that they're joining a very esteemed group of tax professionals who are not following the guidelines when it comes to self-employment income reporting. And then there's other things that are complicated. And, you know, I mean, if you've already have complicated returns, you know, this last year, too, was the first year that people really had to leave their beloved accountants of many years and really find an accountant that was competent in this arena, and it was really hard. And it's even harder this year because a lot of practices are full. There's a lot of people who have said that was too much work. I'm not taking any more same-sex legally related couples. And, you know, I think there's a real challenge out there in our community. And really, not all tax professionals are created equally right now because they don't have the tools that they should in order to make these returns consistent and easy. I'd call Land a legal help desk.
I mean, if you're dealing with this for the first time and you have anything more than just two W-2s, you probably want to at least consult with somebody this year, even if then you figure you can do your own tax returns if you're used to it and you're fairly savvy. If you haven't consulted with anybody ever about it, chances are likely that you may be making mistakes on your return.
And just to emphasize again what our help desk can offer, we do, as I mentioned, have a list of tax professionals basically across the states that are at issue here. And they're not just CPAs or enrolled agents from the Yellow Pages. They're, in fact, tax professionals who've self-identified themselves to us as being able to handle these type of situations. And so while we don't actually vet them or screen them, they are people who most likely will have more knowledge about these issues than somebody you just happen to find in the Yellow Pages.
Great, thanks. Peter, who is most likely to benefit from the new position, and who is likely to see a downside?
So as a result of the IRS position, we believe that more people will benefit than will see a downside. But the people who really stand to benefit primarily are those who have income differentials in the couple. So, for example, one person is a student or a stay-at-home parent or works part-time, and the other person is the primary income earner. That can lead to significant tax savings when you income split. In terms of who stands to see a possible downside as a result of income splitting, this really varies. But, for example, if you both previously without income splitting qualified for a child tax credit or education credit. Income splitting may cause you to lose credits. Similarly, if you receive scholarship money and as a result of income splitting, you now have more money than you made before, essentially, then that may also affect your ability to get that scholarship money. And similarly, it also could affect means-tested government benefits. So for example, the AIDS Drug Assistance Program is one such program. And if you, as a result of income splitting, start to have a reasonably sizable income, that could, of course, disqualify your eligibility for those government programs as well. And identifying those downsides doesn't mean that you should, of course, get divorced or exit your relationship, break up. It instead probably means that you should consider whether a domestic partnership agreement like Karen and Deb have been talking about might be a good thing for you to consider. And again, that would only fix things on a prospective basis, not a retroactive basis.
And just in case there's anybody on the call who doesn't understand what you mean by income splitting, could you quickly explain what you mean by that?
Sure. So the simplest example is, you know, one person makes $100,000, the other person makes zero. As a result of income splitting, each person reports $50,000 in income.
Okay, great. Thanks. Karen, can you give us some nuts and bolts tips as to how to go about filing 2011 taxes?
Yeah.
People still do their own taxes, or is it too complicated for them to do it themselves?
Yeah, if they're not going to do it themselves, some things that you should know is you should both go to the same preparer. If either one of you goes to an income tax preparer who is willing to do the tax return for just one of you, you are probably at the wrong person because you're going to be way overcharged because they have to know all the information from both people in order to do the returns properly. So you really should both go to the same preparer, which was a hardship for some people, because I had a lot of clients who had their own preparer that they liked very much and had never changed. But it's really important to have the same preparer preparing the returns, be sure they're consistent. No e-filing. We're probably not going to e-file for this year. I am not going to e-file any returns for this year again. We do know people who tried to e-file last year. They prepared the return correctly, they e-filed it, it got accepted as e-filed, but then the IRS would go in and adjust the refund amounts, issued the improper refunds, and two-thirds of the returns that were e-filed were getting letters from the IRS, and it was as hard to give the money back to the IRS that you weren't supposed to get as it was to get money from them that you were supposed to get. It turned into a nightmare, and those people stopped e-filing. So e-filing returns is just still not possible for us. If you hear people who say they're e-filing their returns, they're probably not filing them correctly to the letter of the law. So that's just not going to work yet. TurboTax has said this year that they have increased their ability to handle these returns. What they said is that you have to be able to determine your community property and your separate property. They won't help you do that. But if you have already done that, they can do your tax return. Now, I don't use TurboTax, and I don't know. I bought a copy, but I haven't even figured out yet how to use it and how to determine what they're doing and whether they're doing it well. My guess is on TurboTax, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, my guess is they're following the IRS guidance on self-employment income, which means that the person who is the self-employed person will be losing half of their Social Security credits, half of their ability to make a SEP IRA contribution, and potentially losing some of their ability to deduct their medical premiums if you use TurboTax and they do it that way, again, with a caveat. So if you go to a professional preparer, some of the things the IRS has said, we would like you to put the information on the lines that it would normally appear on, meaning line 7 has the W-2 earnings. The IRS says if I have a $100,000 W-2, they want me to put $50,000 on my tax return and they want me to put $50,000 on Deb's tax return. But in fact, my employer is going to report $100,000 to the IRS. So the minute I do that, number one, I'm going to get a matching letter from the IRS, absolutely for sure. And number two, if you use any sort of tax software program, that hack software program is going to make incorrect calculations. Because when you put something on that W-2 line, it means you have earned income. So if Deb's not working at all and she puts $50,000 of my earned income on her W-2 line, it's going to tell her she can make an IRA contribution based on that. But in fact, that's not true because there are special provisions in the code that say when you calculate earned income, you're not supposed to consider community property income. She doesn't have earned income. She has community property income. But there's not a tax program out there that I am aware of that knows that or that you can even tell that to yet, which is a big part of our problems. So what we have recommended doing and what a lot of people did last year and the returns did get processed was I'm putting my $100,000 of my W-2 on line 7, just like it matches my W-2 from my employer. Then I'm going to line 21, which is an other income line where you can make adjustments, and I'm putting minus $50,000. That way I show my proper $50,000 that I should be taxed on net, but I show $100,000 so that it matches my W-2, and I show $100,000 of earned income so that all the calculations that are based on that are calculating properly. Then when I go to Deb's income, I'm not going to put it on line 7 because she didn't earn it. I'm going to put it on line 21 for her. So on line 21 for her, she has plus $50,000. That way she pays tax on the proper amount that's hers of the income. But the tax program doesn't think it's her earned income. It realizes it's other income to her. So using line 21 to make the adjustments is a big thing to know to do. But you should do that for earned income, but not for every part of income. And that's because if you have dividend income or you have capital gains income, for example, those incomes get special tax rates. So if we had $1,000 worth of dividend income as well, and it was all qualified dividend income, but I put it on debit line 21, she's going to pay regular ordinary income rates on it. So she's not going to get the special capital gains tax rate, the special investment income tax rate on that. So for investment income, for capital gains income, I'm going to actually need to make those adjustments on those proper lines on the tax return. So it does get a little more complicated to both come up with what's the correct tax amount, the correct income amount to be taxed, and get it taxed at the correct tax rate. And then in addition to that, we have to put an attachment, a spreadsheet, showing that I made the $100,000 and we allocated it 50-50, showing that we had $1,000 of dividend income and we allocated it 500-500. And same way with our deductions, we show how those were allocated, whether they were community property or separate property. We have to attach that to the tax return. And then we're recommending that you put on the top of the tax return, I actually put it on every page of the tax returns that I filed, is that the tax return is being filed pursuant to CCA 2010-21050. And so I put that as a watermark on the bottom of every single page of the tax returns that were filed. In addition, for any tax form that has tax withholding that you're splitting on the returns, so the W-2 or if you have a 1099 from a pension plan distribution that had tax withheld on it, maybe your investments might have had some tax withholding on them. Anything that has tax withholding, you need to put a copy on each of the two tax returns. You need to circle with the withholding, and you need to show the IRS how you have allocated that tax withholding between the two tax returns.
Karen, can you file these two tax returns together to make it easy for the IRS?
No. Do not try to help the IRS in that way. Basically, if you file the two tax returns together, in the same envelope, what we're told is the IRS is going to take them out, they're going to staple them together, and they're only going to process the top tax return. It's very likely that the second person's tax return never gets processed. The IRS says they never received it. So you should file them in two separate envelopes, even though they're going to the same address. They should be filed in two separate envelopes you should file them certified mail, return receipt requested. Last year, we got a lot of returns where the IRS said we never got it. It took them a long time to actually get the returns processed and get them into their computer system to be to even show up as having been filed. So if we have the certified mail return receipt, we can prove that we mailed it to them. And you know, they're much more likely to actually come up with the tax return in that case when we can show them, in fact, it had been delivered to them. Last year, we did have tax returns that were just kicked back. And they happened to be stamped with Joanne Bell's initial, Jane Bell, from the Fresno office, who's a manager in the Fresno Service Center that everybody has the stamp for. And we had returns just sent back, and they said, you can't file your return like this. And not only is that not true that you can't, but in fact you are required to. So, but they're going to the lowest level of person at the IRS to be processed. And some of those people have been trained, and some of those people know what they're doing, and some of those people either haven't been trained, perhaps have a bit of homophobia, or they just don't quite understand what they're looking at. And even if you have it, it was filed pursuant to the CCA, they're sending it back. I just had one this week sent back to the taxpayer saying, you can't file this way. Now, I have a big cover sheet explaining what we're doing. I have every single page marked. I have the W-2s attached. So if you get that back, you just send it right back to the IRS and say, yes, not only can I file this way, I have to file this way and get send it back and get it processed again. We also had, in terms of, this is probably a good place to talk about some other filing issues. We had last year, we had a lot of penalty letters being issued, particularly on estimated tax payments. And the penalties were not supposed to be applied, and you have to call the IRS, write the IRS, explain to them that it's registered domestic partner or same-sex married couple returns, that all the tax had been paid on your partner's return, perhaps, under their tax payments, and try to get those penalties taken off of the returns. We're still fighting some of those. The IRS Internal Revenue Manual that I talked about, they have said in there now that if estimated tax penalties were erroneously applied, that the agent should remove the penalty, and it tells them exactly how to remove the penalty, and it tells them in their Internal Revenue Manual that they should apologize to the taxpayer. Now, we haven't actually gotten any apologies yet, even when we pointed it out that this is what they're supposed to do. They usually say, I need to talk to my supervisor. But we can use the information to you guys at Lambda on the specific section of that Internal Revenue Manual. So the IRS is making progress, but you might not encounter the progress when you file your tax return. But we are going down the road of making progress.
Okay, great. Well, we have I'd like to ask you, we're kind of running out of time, but I'd like to ask a general question about how couples deal with particular deductions and credits. And we actually have a question from an audience member about married couples filing separately and whether or not they can deduct student loan interest or child dependent care expenses. And does this also apply to same-sex couples who don't have the option of filing jointly? So in general, questions about particular deductions and credits, and specifically as it relates to student loan interest and child independent care expenses.
Well, what happens with child independent care expenses, you can claim the children any way you'd like, but you cannot split one child in half. This is the IRS's position. So if you have three children, you can claim them 3 and 0. You can claim them 2 and 1. You can claim them 1 and 2. You can claim them 0 and 3. You just can't do 1.5, 1.5, or 2.5, 1.5. And then for, obviously, the partner that claims the children would claim the child care expenses for that child. For the student loan interest, it's a little more complicated. You claim the student loan interest for your student loan, but we've had a lot of people who phase out of getting the student loan deduction now. Because if you were the one who was a student and you just got out of school and you're paying your student loan and you're not making that much yet, you might have been able to deduct your student loan interest previously. But if your partner, in fact, was working and that's how you were able to be going to school still, now you have half of your partner's income on your return. That very likely, in almost every case in my client base, has made the student now, the ex-student now, over the AGI limit to be able to deduct that student loan interest. And that is one of the negative results of the income splitting that we are seeing. But in general, in terms of the deductions, you look to see what funds paid for the expense. If it was paid out of community property, then each of you paid 50-50. And then, for example, for the mortgage, you're paying it out of your wages. You're each paying 50-50. You each deduct half of that mortgage interest expense. Now, having said you each deduct half of it, I would again say that we handle it in the same way that we handle the W-2. So we each deduct half of it, but in fact, the 1098 comes to me in my Social Security number because my name's first in the alphabet and it's the first one listed on the form. Okay? So the 1098 comes to me. The 1098 is reported to the IRS. So what I'm going to do on the tax returns that I file for my clients is, first I'm going to put all of that mortgage interest on my return, and then I'm going to back out half of it and say I'm transferring it to my partner and give them my partner's Social Security number. And then that goes on the line on my tax return that says I had 1098 was issued to me. And on my partner does not have a 1098 that was issued to her Social Security number, so it goes on the next line on the tax return for her half of the mortgage interest deduction. So we always try to match what the IRS is receiving in terms of the Social Security number. And in fact, in the past, a lot of people filed their tax returns that way. It wasn't really accurate in many cases, because if we were both paying the mortgage before all of this CCA stuff happened, we each should have been deducting half. But a lot of people were just putting on one person's tax return because the form came to their Social Security number, or perhaps because they were the one making more money. Those might not have been correct ways to file their return previously. But now we put it on the person who got the 1098 and then transfer half of it to the other partner if it was paid with community property funds.
What if only one partner's name is on the mortgage?
Well, it depends on what they're paying the mortgage with. If they're paying the mortgage with separate property income, and then that would be a separate property deduction or mortgage interest deduction. If they're paying it with community property, that's a really good question. If the second partner has no legal obligation as part of that mortgage because they're not on the mortgage or they haven't assigned half the note to the partner, then, in fact, you may lose half of the mortgage interest deduction because if you're paying with community property, you're only paying 50 cents of every dollar out of your income. So, you know, I think one of the things that we have to remember is that when we took on our domestic partnerships and our same-sex marriages, we got the benefits and the burdens. But, you know, the one thing, Karen, that I want to ask is that this is all really hard and complex right now, and, you know, unnecessarily so, but for DOMA. But how did it play out over the course of your season? Did people end up benefiting as a community? Did we pay more? Did we get money back? What do you think the overall estimate based on all of your clients?
I think overall for the entire client base, people came out well ahead by being able to split the community property. There were some clients who lost. Many of them came out even. If you were already in similar tax brackets and those middle tax brackets are really big, you might not have changed tax brackets at all. So a lot of people came out pretty even to what they were before. But if you had a disparity in income at all, many, many couples came out farther ahead with much, much larger refunds from the IRS now by being able to take income that was taxed at a higher rate and put it over on their partner's return and then get it taxed at a lower rate. So I would say, in general, people have come out ahead. And then, of course, on the amending, we haven't talked about the amended returns at all tonight, but you were allowed to go back and amend 07, 08, 09. Now 07 is closed, so it's 08 and 09 in California. And I believe it's 08 in Washington State and 09 in Nevada that you might have been able to go back and amend. And on the amended returns, you only amended if you were coming out ahead. So for the amended returns, everybody came out ahead. Everybody came out ahead in very large dollar amounts. We had, you know, refunds of $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 per year for many couples. Last year. So overall, it's been a great benefit, not just sort of politically in that we are actually getting some sort of recognition at the federal level, but economically for couples as well.
All right. Let me ask just a few kind of specific questions regarding what constitutes community versus separate property. We have a question about how this will impact filing head of household, and specifically when one person is providing all the income and there is a child in the relationship.
Well, head of household, and you can look on the IRS in their questions and answers because they did address the head of household question. If all of your income is community property income, say that we have the simplest situation, all you have is a W-2 earner. One person earns all the money, the other person stays home with the child. Previously, the person who earned all the money would have claimed both the child and her partner as dependents on her tax return. Now she doesn't claim her partner. She claims the child, but her partner files her own tax return, but we take the income and we split it, and we're putting half of the income on each one of those tax returns. If all of the income is from community property income, each of those two partners are paying exactly 50% of the household expenses. In order to claim head of household, you have to be able to prove that you paid more than 50%. So if you don't have any separate property income, if neither one of you have any separate property income, you can no longer file as head of household. If either one of you do have separate property income, which we talked about, you could have separate property, which was what you owned before you got married or before you became a partnership. Gifts that you received during the year are separate property by law. Inheritances are separate property by law. If you take some money from that separate property and you pay your utility bill with it, now you have supported your household more than 50%, and that person who did that would be the person who would qualify for head of household status.
What about Social Security income?
The IRS said in their questions and answers that they issued on November the 16th that Social Security income is determined by your state, whether it's community property or separate property. So you look to how your state defines it. Now, for the state of California, I know we still have some disagreement on whether Social Security is separate or community, even in the state of California for sure, and I'm not sure about Washington and Nevada, but you'd have to look at the state law. Generally, we haven't ever had to determine whether Social Security is community income while you're in relationship and you're receiving it. In California, if you get divorced, it becomes separate property at divorce. So if it's your Social Security, you keep it. But if you earn that Social Security while you're together and you bought a car with it, is that car your separate property or is that car community property asset? I think we don't know for sure, and I think there have been arguments both ways on whether Social Security should be treated as community property or separate property. I've seen it claimed both ways.
And what about unemployment insurance?
Unemployment is typically a replacement of income, of earned income during the relationship. So if you're legally related and it's replacing the income you would have otherwise earned, then it would be treated as community property income.
Right.
Likewise for disability income.
Okay, well, it looks like we're about out of time. Do any of you have one last comment that you would like to make before I wrap things up? Peter, I'll ask you to start if you have one last thing you'd like to say.
Sure. Well, if people are in the process of getting their financial ducks in a row because of income splitting, it's also a good time just to be looking at other things you might want to do to clean house a little bit. And one thing that we definitely recommend is that people consider taking care of estate planning and making sure that all your life planning documents are in order. We have a publication that I mentioned earlier. It's our Life and Financial Planning Toolkit, which you can find on our website by searching Take the Power Toolkit, that gives you some information about that and lays out some of the very basic estate planning documents that we strongly encourage people to get. Because as we know, if you travel, the statuses that are recognized in your home state may not necessarily be recognized in other states. And so it's very important that you plan for those contingencies.
Deb, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
Yeah, as complicated as this is, I think everybody should just remember that we're in the middle of a social rights struggle, and it's thanks to organizations like yours that we've made it so far. And it's totally important that we keep continuing to support these organizations. And we can't thank Lambda enough for the assistance that you've been lending in trying to get resolution around these IRS issues. And for everybody out there, if you get a refund back, please donate part of it to your favorite LGBT organization, because we're all in this together, and it is getting better.
And Karen, would you like to say one last comment?
Yeah, it is a positive step forward. It's confusing, but we are going to be—we're much more educated, having gone through this process. And even though it's painful, and I handed out therapist cards to some of my clients when I sent them off to figure out their community property and their separate property, in fact, it puts the partners in the relationship in a better position with each other to actually understand their rights and their obligations for their formalized relationships. And so I think it has helped in that way, even if it's painful to get there. And talk to the Lambda Legal Help Desk to get some qualified help if you need it, because there are people out there who are willing to help you to figure this out.
Well, I want to thank all of you so much for sharing your time and your experience and your expertise with us tonight. We are certainly grateful for all you have, the information that you have given to our callers. And I want to also thank the callers for joining us tonight. I realize that we didn't get to all of the questions that you asked, but again, you can visit our website or you can call 213-382-7600. That's our help desk alt number if your question wasn't answered tonight. For all of you who are not members but found this information helpful, we hope that you will consider making a gift to Lambda Legal, and you can do that by visiting our website at www.lambdalegal.org/donate and make a tax-deductible gift of any size to our organization. We need your help so that we can continue to do these kinds of seminars. Please note that we hope that there will be, by sometime late tomorrow afternoon, an MP3 recording of this seminar that you can go back and listen to on the website if you didn't get all the information that you needed. But again, thank you to all of you who participated in the panel and to all of you for joining in with us tonight. Thank you so much, and good night to all of you.